Hey everybody, welcome into a special episode of Charlotte Soccer Show. It's the full-time roundup takeover. Daniel Brackett is here, host of the full-time roundup. I'm John Hayes, of course. Danny Brackett hanging out with us to talk about soccer on Monday during happy hour. It's a cheers to you, Daniel Brackett. Cheers to you on this Monday evening. Welcome to Charlotte Soccer Show, and will you welcome me to full-time roundup?
Yeah, no, absolutely happy to be here. Not the DB everyone probably expected here, but I'm glad to be on and doing a little joint thing here. And excited to talk some footy. A lot of good games, MLS, European soccer. As you know, European soccer is kind of winding down. MLS is ramping up with 2 weeks or two games in 1 week here.
Absolutely. So we've got a lot planned on the show today. We're going to talk about the Premier League weekend. That was a game just now wrapped up about 30 minutes ago in the Premier League. Liverpool and Aston Villa tied a 3-3 thriller there with Champions League implications in that match. We'll talk about that. We'll preview some midweek madness. MLS at the midweek, Charlotte FC at the midweek, Premier League matches at the midweek, EFL Championship playoff matches at the midweek. This is a perfect time, Danny, for a Charlotte Soccer Show full-time roundup collaboration episode. And I'm really, really excited about this. First and foremost, you're wearing your Charlotte FC gear, right? You're feeling proud. You're looking good after 3 points against Nashville on Saturday night at the Keep. Are you vibing still on this Monday evening?
I certainly am. I actually had the Liverpool kit on, but once they gave up that lead, I ripped it off and threw on the FC kit. I couldn't be seen in that right now. But yeah, no, I was in our group chat. I was kind of worried about Nashville before a little bit. And so I didn't know how the game was going to go. So I'm definitely hyped that we were able to kind of walk out of there with 3 points and keep the not a home record alive, but still remain a fortress at home.
Well, it's certainly one of those things that we're going to discuss when it comes to the MLS roundup portion of the show. But just, you know, briefly, what I'll say is I was there on Saturday night. It was a really, really nice, way to just celebrate the club with Patrick Aujemong scoring that goal, right? It was just a moment to soak in, especially after Enzo Capetti announced, I guess the club announced, if you will, that Enzo Capetti is no longer part of this project. It was Patrick Aujemong's night. And all of a sudden, he stepped up to the plate and scored a really, really sweet goal with that left foot. We're going to get into that during the MLS roundup portion of the show. But first and foremost, let's start out with some Premier League talk. It's something that y'all do really well on the full-time roundup. Where do you want to start? Should we start with the Champions League race, considering this Aston Villa-Liverpool game just ended just a few minutes before we kicked off things here live on a Monday evening?
I think, yeah, fresh off the press, that definitely makes sense to jump into it. And, you know, you're a Spurs fan. I'm a Liverpool fan. So we were kind of had an allegiance today in a way. But unfortunately, you know, a point, not a terrible result for Spurs as they're kind of catching up to playing catch up here in fifth place right now, a good 5 points behind Villa. But, you know, you need all the points that you can get at this stage of the Premier League. And I'm sure when Liverpool was up 3-1, you were a lot happier than you are now, as I was as well.
Well, it's crazy because, you know, Liverpool has had a really big hand in the Premier League title race, part of the Premier League title race for 98% of the season, bowed out just within the last week and a half. A really strong season for Liverpool. Obviously doesn't end up the way that they want to, but they find themselves on the road against an Aston Villa side, Brackett, that is playing for Champions League qualification. With a win today, Aston Villa would have went and automatically qualified for the Champions League. Now they've left the door open for Tottenham. Just barely, though. It feels like the draw today almost seals the deal, considering Tottenham is playing Manchester City on Tuesday afternoon in an incredibly important match for Man City and Pep Guardiola. Even though Tottenham has such a really strong record against Man City and Pep Guardiola at home. Pep finally got a win against Tottenham earlier this year in the FA Cup. So at least that monkey's off his back. At least he's not talking about that going into Tuesday afternoon's match. But he's thinking about a title. He's thinking about silverware. And when Pep Guardiola and this Manchester City side is focusing on that, you know what typically happens. I expect a Manchester City win on Tuesday, and I expect Aston Villa to end up qualifying for the Champions League now because of it.
No, I could probably agree with that, but you know, we've mentioned this a lot, and just sometimes history transcends form and talent and coaching, and so we've seen that multiple times this year. So I'm still gonna somehow, some way, give Spurs a shot here to kind of shock Man City, but you know, it seems kind of done here. And we're talking about this Liverpool Aston Villa game. I mean, Aston Villa haven't won in the past five games, including this one, three straight losses before this. So I was genuinely expecting Liverpool to get the win here. They could not have started the game out any better than that first minute goal, an own goal by Martinez. I don't really know what happened there with him. I guess the deflection kind of threw him off there, but Liverpool are given a lifeline early, and you know, they look to build on that. They give up an equalizer to Yuri Tielemans, but then quickly score another one to kind of end the half at 2-1. So, you know, did you see anything in this match that really caught the eye to you other than just really poor defending?
Well, honestly, the first thing that caught my eye was the fact that Aston Villa was down 3-1 in the most important match of the season at home. Unai Emery was sitting on the bench. You could tell that he was distraught about it, that they were failing under the microscope, and that in the most important game of the season, things were not going his way. And quite frankly, I thought it was a professional performance by Liverpool. And one thing, Brackett really changed the match. And it was a sub there in the 79th minute.
MLS star, John Duran, Chicago Fire.
He is tapped on the shoulder. Unai Emery says, "Hey, there's an injury on the pitch. Let's get him in there." And all of a sudden, it's two goals in 3 minutes for John Duran. And that's what I saw from this match, right? The tying goal was certainly a little bit freaky. Did he mean that? Probably not.
So.
Probably not. But still, he got a touch on the ball, and he lofted it over Alisson's head, and it was an important goal for Aston Villa. So if I was just going to underscore one thing, it was just the substitution, right? I'll give Unai Emery credit for putting the right player on the field at the right time and giving Aston Villa what looks like a ticket to the Champions League in 2025, which is really fucking cool for a club that has not been in the Champions League. And I say 2025, I know it's a year to year, but I think of next year as 24-25 Champions League. And to think about this job that Unai Emery has done, Brackett, it's pretty impressive, is it not?
I've been super high on Aston Villa all season. One of my favorite teams to watch. I thought how they went about their business in the summer was, you know, second to none. Maybe Spurs can be up there in terms of a rebuild. And they just, you know, they've had an injection of cash with the club, and they've spent it wisely. And that doesn't, you know, go on enough, because a lot of teams have cash, but where do they utilize that cash is what matters. And signing a player like Yuri Tielemans, who scores the goal against Liverpool in the summer on a free from Leicester, just a signing like that, you know, Paul Torres at the back, they look really good. You know, they got the European experience in the Europa Conference League. They did bow out to Olympiacos, but they still have that bad taste in their mouth from some European competition. So they should be ready for Champions League next season if they qualify, because Unai Emery is one of the best managers in the world. And I'm sure they're going to spend a little bit more cash in the summer as well.
Shout out to Chief Kiefer, who is here, one of our TIFOs, a tremendous friend of the show. Great to see you, Chief Kiefer, on a Saturday. Thanks for joining our pregame show live from Hopfly Brewing Company. It's great to have you on the show. Former MLS player Duran with the crucial brace. Kiefer's all over that. Kiefer is a Arsenal fan, right? So I think, you know, today we talked about Champions League implications, but tomorrow we're going to see title implications. This past weekend bracket, we saw title implications. Arsenal against Manchester United on Sunday. Arsenal gets the job done, when 1-0. Manchester City on the road against Tottenham, like I mentioned. Where do you stand right now on this title race coming into the final week of the season?
I mean, on full disclosure, I want Arsenal to win this. And it's not just because Manchester City have, you know, won a ton in the last 5 years, but it's more Arsenal have beat or unbeaten within the top six opponents. And for me, that, you know, shows that they are a strong team and that they can go and beat anyone on their given day. And although it was a narrow victory against a B team, Manchester United, and the performance didn't exactly impress me, they still got the 3 points at the end of the day. And I'm hoping they can hang on for dear life and maybe get thrown a bone in terms of, you know, maybe Tottenham upsetting Manchester City. They do sit atop of the Premier League right now, but Man City do have that game in hand that they could go 2 points ahead. So we'll have to see, but I'm a full gunner at this point.
One thing when you look at the title race, the bracket is that both teams at the end of the season here have done their jobs. Both teams are on a winning streak right now. Both teams are sprinting through the finish line. Arsenal not tripped up against Manchester United. One more match at the end of the season on Sunday. On who does Arsenal play on Sunday, bracket?
That's a good question. Let me check real quick.
They've got Everton. They've got Everton at home to finish the season on Championship Sunday. And yeah, that's a match that quite frankly they should win. It's not a match that, you know, you can roll over and win. But at the same time, it's a team that has won now how many straight Premier League games? We've got 5 straight Premier League games in a row for Arsenal to finish the season to make it 6. So if Arsenal beats Everton on Sunday, you can say that that Mikel Arteta had his squad run through the finish line. Just going up against a Man City squad is so difficult. And as I sit here today, as I'm looking at this title race and I'm thinking about, you know, despite most of the world wanting Arsenal to win this title, Manchester City has Tottenham and then West Ham. Both teams are beatable. And Manchester City will likely finish their season. Speaking about a winning streak, it's now, let's call it, 4, 5. How many games in a row has Manchester City won? 6, 7 games in a row in the Premier League before that draw against Arsenal.
When it comes to Manchester City, when that New Year's Eve pops up, that's when they really start kind of putting Premier League performances together. And we've been echoing that same sentiment, especially Matt has for a while now. You know, they've been lucky with injuries as well. They've stayed fairly healthy and they're the healthiest they've been all season coming into these matches. And so it's really going to be if someone wants to play spoiler. And we've been really blessed. I mean, or 2 years ago, the Premier League title was decided on the final day. So, you know, if Spurs can do some magic here in the midweek, we're really primed for a fantastic final weekend of Premier League football.
I've got a tough question for you, and I think you're going to enjoy this question. I'm going to put it up on the screen for the people as well, for the TIFOs watching here live. I appreciate you watching our Charlotte Soccer Show full-time roundup takeover here on the Charlotte Soccer Show YouTube show. How many goals would Patrick Ajimong score as City striker?
Oh, God. More than people would think, I feel like.
I pose that question as a joke, but like legitimately, if he was playing striker for City, how many goals could he score?
I mean, the kid is just clinical. So if you give him a chance, he's going to score. He has that Haaland type body where he can create some space. I mean, we saw him, and we'll get to it in a little bit, but we saw him manhandle veteran defenders, you know, on Saturday. I'm going to say I'm going to say he's at John Durant numbers with five to seven, maybe, coming on as a, super sub, pumping balls in the box and seeing, if he can get a knockdown, and he's going to put the ball in the back of the net at the end of the day.
No, it's a fun question. I'm curious what the TIFOs think about that. How many goals would Patrick Aujamong score as a Man City striker? I think that he could get 10 goals. I really do think that he could get 10. And the reason why is because Chief Kiefer, he agrees with me right on cue. 10 plus for Big Pat as the Manchester City striker. What else we need to talk about when it comes to Premier League, right? We hit on the fact that this Premier League title race is coming down to the wire here. We've got this Champions League race happening between fourth and fifth that feels kind of over as well. There's one more team I think that's pushing for something, and it happens to be a team of our good friend of the full-time roundup co-host. He's a Chelsea supporter. I'm a Mauricio Pochettino fan. There's no doubt about that. So Chelsea right now is making a push for European places. What's the status of that right now, Bracket? Is it realistic?
It feels a little bit too late, in my opinion. I mean, I've been shooting down Matt's premises of finishing top six for months now, one man army here. But I mean, if you look at it, Chelsea do play Bournemouth this weekend. That's going to be a really tough game. Bournemouth are a really good side. You also have to worry about Newcastle, who are level on points as well. They play Brentford. So I'm not buying it. Chelsea also have to play Brighton midweek. And Newcastle, by coincidence, play Manchester United. So we're going to really know the answer to that question on Wednesday. But I feel like, I don't see it. But, I've been proved time and time again wrong with this Chelsea squad. And they seem like they're finally putting a couple, performances together here at the end and finishing on a really good note.
Well, when I'm looking at the table, right, and I mentioned Everton earlier as kind of like a team that Arsenal should beat. There's a handful of teams that are having a really, really strong finish to the season. And Chelsea is one of those teams because they have three wins in their last three with a draw before that. So they're stacking points. Crystal Palace is stacking points as well here at the end of the season. Good for them. Really fun project. And I know you've got thoughts on that quickly. What's your take on Crystal Palace? It's been fun to watch here in the end of the year, haven't they?
Oliver Glasner and Crystal Palace are so good right now that Bayern is willing to pay a fee of $25 million for Oliver Glasner for next year. That should kind of epitomize what I think of Crystal Palace. I mean, they're since Roy Hodgson left and Glasner came in, number one fix was getting Mateta to put the ball in the back of the net. Number two was to get Eze and Elise healthy and on the field together. And those front three have absolutely clicked. They signed Adam Wharton from the championship in January, I believe, and he's just been a shoe-in. We got Chris Richards starting multiple games at the back, and he's been fantastic as a U.S. national. One of the better sides to watch right now, and they are just banging in goals left and right. I love them.
Yeah, it's been a really, really strong end of the season for Crystal Palace. I'm really excited to see what happens here in the offseason during the transfer window and what Palace can do if they do lose their manager, who they replace that manager with. A bit of a musical chairs at that manager position for Crystal Palace.
Be nice and players.
Yeah, that too, and players. It'd be nice to see them sort that out. I'm always rooting for Crystal Palace because they're Rebecca Lowe's squad. And, you always want to support Rebecca when you
got to.
It's easy to support Crystal Palace when Rebecca's in their corner. And by the way, Everton. Everton's the other squad. You could argue that Brentford also has had a nice, Brentford has had a really nice, strong finish to the season to avoid relegation. I got to give Thomas Frank credit for that and got to give Sean Dyche credit as well for Everton finishing the season strongly. But those are the teams. Everton, Brentford, Chelsea, Crystal Palace, and then the two teams at the top of the table, Arsenal, Manchester City, that are running through the tape for me. So it's pretty impressive. Does Chelsea want to play in Conference League? Do the billion-dollar boys want to play in the Conference League?
That's a whole question in itself. I mean, I think European competitions are a good experience, especially for how young their squad is. But if your goal is Champions League football, do you really want to be bogged down all season? And we've seen what happens to teams that play in those lower competitions. I mean, Aston Villa were one of the best teams in the Premier League entire season in the last probably month. You just saw the legs kind of give up, the injuries starting to hit. So it's really a question of, do they have a deep enough squad to be able to kind of play two separate lineups in each competition? If the answer is no, then probably not. But if they, you know, are going to look at the Europa Conference League as a spot to rotate and give some youngsters, which they have some of the best young talent in the Premier League, some run-in, then I think why not? So you'd have to ask a Chelsea fan that. I'd be interested to see what they have to say, but I think all experience is good experience at the end of the day.
I think there would be a situation, and by the way, this happened for Tottenham with Nuno Espirito Santo as manager when Spurs were in the Conference League. A lot of the top players for Spurs did not travel to Conference League away matches. It almost was like the team was split into two. And I think Mauricio Pochettino is a manager, and I'm glad that we've got your co-host chiming in here.
Now, here we go.
Yes, Matt Geslin says, yes, the answer is yes. And I tend to agree with him just because Mauricio Pochettino is a manager that really likes to bring along young players. I think that Mauricio Pochettino would kind of split his squad into two. I think he would have a Europa Conference League squad full of young players who he sees as a part of his 4 or 5 year plan at Chelsea. And he would have his top players, the players that are making a ton of money, the players that are really important to a real Premier League title push. Maybe stay at home and play at some home Europa Conference League matches, but not go out on the road.
I'd have to agree. I mean, if you look at, you know, they did spend $1 billion, like you mentioned before. So they have plenty of players, all young, that they can dispose of. And so, you know, Romy Lavia is a player, I think, of as an example. Didn't play almost any minutes this season due to injuries. But, you know, you slot him in the middle of the park on a Thursday night in Serbia, and you let him get some minutes under the belt and see what he can do. So I feel like you can answer a lot of questions too. Are some of these young players the answer going forward from that experience?
I'm trying to think. Was it Vinny Mello that went to a Serbian team? It was because some Charlotte FC guys have gone over to Serbia. Maybe Chelsea will find itself playing up against those former Charlotte FC guys.
That'd be a fun link up.
It certainly will be. It certainly would be, especially on this show, the Charlotte Soccer Show full-time roundup collab podcast that we're doing today on this Monday. We're going to get into MLS here. And Brackett, I want you to lead the discussion on this because I know that you had eyes all over MLS on Saturday night while you were at the beach in North Carolina. You had a chance to watch the Charlotte FC game. I had a chance to go to the match. We can talk about that game. We can talk about the Eastern Conference as well. A lot of good matches this past Saturday and a lot of good midweek matches as well. But I know that most people watching this show right now are here for the EFL playoff discussion, for the deep dive into the 0-0 draws on Sunday in the EFL Championship. What's going to happen later this week? We're going to get to that in a few minutes, but first, it's time to dive into the MLS roundup, and it was a fantastic weekend domestically, wasn't it, Danny?
That's an understatement. I think it broke. It was second in all goals scored across the board. There was only one game that only had one goal, and that happened to be the Charlotte FC match. And coincidentally, every other game, just goals were just flying left and right. So, you know, if you had the MLS, you know, just network goal zone or whatever you call it, you probably
MLS 360.
MLS 360. Thank you. I mean, God help them. They were probably flipping every 30 seconds to find a goal. I don't know how you do that, but I'd definitely love to get into the Charlotte FC first, of utmost importance. It was definitely tough not to be there in the crowd and experience that win with, you know, the supporters and everything like that. But I came away super impressed with how we played and how we set up. You mentioned on the pre-match show just how good Sam Surridge and Hani Mukhtar can be. And we completely shut them down. And I don't even think they had a shot in the box, I believe. But, you know, and that came to not only the midfield three that Dean Smith employed, but Milanda and Privet probably having their best duo performance together. And Privet was unplayable this match. It was really impressive.
Well, Andrew Privet made MLS Team of the Week.
Well deserved.
And you know, I think there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, he deserves it, that he played well on Saturday night. And I agree with that 100%. But I'm also going to say Andrew Privet's been doing that now for a year and a half.
Yes.
And it's really difficult for a center back to make MLS Team of the Week, especially when you're and Andrew and his parents. I know Shane Privet is a huge TIFOs here on Charlotte Soccer Show. Don't take this the wrong way, but when you're a bit of a no-name center back, drafted, and you are playing center back, it's easy to get overlooked in this league. There's no doubt about that. So to see Andrew Privet get his moment to be inserted into the MLS Team of the Match Day, I think is not just a representation of what he did on Saturday. I think it's a representation of what he's done over the last year and a half for this club. He's been vitally important to this club. But for me, someone you know who was there, right, who got to experience this match in person, it's always fun to go to the Keep for a match. I enjoyed marching down Mint Street, you know, getting into the stadium, sitting down in the seats. And first and foremost, just let me give a shout out to Paul Finebaum, the coronation honoree. I mean, are you kidding me? It's fucking Paul Finebaum. We're sitting there, we're in our seats, we're watching the match, and there's Paul Finebaum wearing a crown. He's got the Charlotte FC scarf over his head. He's pumping up the crowd. It was just really fun to see somebody like Paul Finebaum, just an absolute titan in the sports media business, receive that honor at Bank of America Stadium and see the team rally around him. You know, they saw Paul and they said, we got to get this win tonight. So it was brilliant to see Paul do that. And then when the game kicked off, you know, Brackett, I think, let's just identify the fact that Brant Bronico in the starting lineup was a big fucking deal.
It was
the first time this season that he's gotten the start. And what'd you make of his performance on Saturday night?
I've seen a lot of people, you know, very impressed with him. And I thought he did the dirty work for Diani and Westwood. And I think that was, you know, key to shutting down Hani Mukhtar. I think that was Dino's game plan all along. Kind of like, you know, Bronico shut down Messi when Miami came to town not too long ago. So I think he had employed the same game plan there. Now,
it doesn't matter. Here's the thing, Brackett. Whether it's Messi, whether it's Mukhtar, whether it's Haaland, you know, whether it's Mbappe, whether it's Vinicius Jr., like, there's nobody that Brant Bronico can't shut down. Put him in his pocket.
No, I have to agree with that, especially defensively. His ability defensively and that work rate that he has is just so impressive. Now, you know, maybe in the final third, it's not, he hasn't been able to kind of hit that final pass, but it's really about what he does on the defensive side to protect us, and you got to love it.
Yeah, you do. I was excited to get kind of your take on that. A really nice moment for Brant Bronico to get his first start of the season after dealing with injury all year. I apologize if you hear the dogs barking in the background. That's Finn making his
appearance. They agree.
Yeah. Finn does agree on the show. It's like Bronny's a dog, you know. Finn knows. Yeah. He's got to bark. He's got to let people know Bronny's a dog. And it was what was interesting is that Charlotte had a really nice opportunity on Saturday night to climb the MLS table. And on Sunday morning, after I looked at the table, I said, well, shit, a lot of other people got 3 points too. And Charlotte remained in the sixth position. I know there were other games that caught your eye this week as well.
Real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Do you mind if I just find it very ironic that the two players that probably stood out the most with Pat Adjumon scoring the goal and Privet's defensive performance, both guys on rookie contracts. And so you mentioned Enzo Capetti leaving. That's two DPs open. But we had these guys who we drafted. We trusted the process. And these guys are making waves in the league. And I think that's super impressive. And not only just a shout out to our scouting department, but without these guys, I don't know where we'd be. And so I'm just really excited for the future and hope that Privet and Adjumon are here for the long haul in terms of being in the black and blue shirt. But yeah, no, there were some great games. you mentioned some teams around us, and right below or below us is DC United, tied on points here, and they gave a big upset to Atlanta, our rival here. And I don't know about you, but as Mercedes-Benz packs out the crowd just like us most weeks, I was very surprised that DC United walked away with 3 points here.
I mean, I've first and foremost, like, whether I'm surprised that DC United walked away with 3 points or not, I'm so glad we're talking about this game next, right? After we've talked about Patrick Ajimong, after we've talked about Charlotte FC, because I'll put it this way. If you're thinking about Patrick Ajimong as a player, as a complete player, as somebody that can get the job done in that striker position, you know what Patrick Ajimong could graduate into ultimately?
Benteke?
Yes. Yes. Benteke puts on an absolute show for DC United at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He scores a brace in the first half. He gets the game-winning goal in the 55th minute. He scored 3 goals in the first 55 minutes of this match. I don't know if you've seen the statistics that are flying around on social today. People are starting to pick up and realize Christian Benteke's aerial duels, his percentage is so far off the charts, you would have to honestly do a double take. And he has won more aerial duels than any player in the MLS by like legitimately 70. I'll go in and find this stat, but what do you make of Christian Benteke, his ability to move over? We talked about Palace. Here's a striker coming from Crystal Palace in the Premier League, coming to MLS, Danny, and doing a great job.
Well, there's a reason Liverpool signed him for big money way back when. It's because of that aerial, you know, threat. And he does a LeBron celebration because he knows how to work in the paint. And he scored a hat trick of headers, which is fairly insane if you think about it. I mean, he didn't even have to use his feet. He just used that head of his. And that first goal, especially just the veteran experience of how he just puts that in the back of the net, it's basically automatic at this point. And you'd think Atlanta would mark him heavier on crosses in and on corners, but he just kept getting free and no one had an answer for him. And poor Brad Guzan and net just kept having to pick the ball out of the net for the restart. And he was so impressive. I feel like last year he just didn't have really, a team to build around him, but now they've made some good signings. You know, they signed Cleek from Leeds United. He's been some of the big service of them. And Troy Lesnes, who coached the Red Bulls last year, has done a fantastic job with DC United, a club that's been good, you know, historically, but the last 5 years have been terrible. And they look like they're building something special in DC.
Okay, I've found the statistic from our friends at The Athletic. Very, very good friends of mine at The Athletic. It was Jeff Reuter who did a really nice installment of this week's MLS takeaways alongside Tom Bogert. If you don't follow The Athletic and their soccer coverage, what are you doing?
$1 a month. Got to.
Christian, well, it's $1 a month if you're a new subscriber.
That's true.
If you don't subscribe, make sure you get in for $1 a month. But if you do subscribe, you're not going to get that deal. but that's neither here nor there. Christian Benteke is a master of the aerial duel. How often MLS's most frequent aerial duelists win their attempts, right? Christian Benteke has won 134 aerial duels. He has lost only 34. 100 more wins than losses this far into the season. And let's just put this into perspective with some other aerial duelists in the MLS. And Sam Surridge of Nashville is somebody who plays in a very similar position, is looking for balls in the air. He's won 21 aerial duels and lost 43. The next highest winning number on aerial duels is Kevin Long with Toronto FC. He's got 54 aerial duels won. He's only lost 13. That's a really, really nice percentage. But 134 is so far and away better than anybody else in MLS. Christian Benteke has clearly, in my mind, established himself as, if not the best, the second best striker in MLS. Who do you think my pick would be for number one?
Oh, that's a tough one. Isn't that? I'm going to have to go with Pat Hajiman again.
No, it's Luis Suarez of Inter Miami.
The Predator, El Pistolero. I don't even know. But yeah, no, I mean, MLS primarily is a league that leans more on service outside the box, crossing in. And so when MLS teams are looking for a striker to put the ball in the back of the net, these big strikers who play the target man position are perfect for that. And we've seen Benteke, we've seen Surridge. I'm excited to see kind of MLS teams start to realize that and start bringing over these big strikers from Europe to kind of just keep in banging the goals in the back of the net. And I sure as hell hope that Charlotte look at someone with a bigger profile as well in the summer to kind of fill that void.
It's a great takeaway, right? We had this debate when Chief Kiefer and I and Ash Hamrick, shout out to Ash Hamrick, who is a huge TIFOs of Charlotte Soccer Show. He came to the Hot Fly Tailgate, came back from Germany. His semester of studying abroad is over. So he's back in the United States, and it was great to see Ash on Saturday. The Rev, Christopher Gallagher was there as well. Level Up Luke. Sorry if I forgot anybody who was in the house, but it's great to see everybody on Saturday. But what we were debating, Bracket, was who can Charlotte FC sign in that established striker position? Somebody like a Christian Benteke, right? Somebody that can come into this league and just dominate in the box. I think it's an interesting debate. The one name that I threw out there, and I'm not saying that this is the guy, but someone that is potentially in that made or cut from that same cloth is Chris Wood of Nottingham Forest. You know, a player like that that's towards the end of his career that just loves to poach.
Yeah, I've heard other comps as well, like Mikel Antonio from West Ham, a big body number nine who can, you know, be an absolute predator in the box. I like both. And I, you know, have to rack my brain a little bit on the spot here to think of anyone else, but you have a decent amount of profiles to choose from. And I think we should definitely, you know, look for a bigger number nine. And when you have, you know, Pat Hajiman as well as another 6'3" plus striker coming in off the bench, that's a real problem for defenders. And I'd like to strike fear in our opponents as much as possible, especially with set pieces too. Set pieces are a huge part of the game. We saw Benteke score off a set piece or two. And so I feel like, you know, the taller, the better in terms of the number nine.
Let me just chime in here with Lad on Fire. One of our great commenters here on Charlotte Soccer Show, talking about the number nine position for Charlotte Bracket. He says, you just sold your DP number nine for this guy. He's talking about Patrick Hajiman. He needs a contract before the summer window. Shameful if he doesn't get it soon. I've been the person, Bracket, screaming from the rooftops.
Agent Johnny.
That Patrick Hajiman only makes $67,000. And by the way, that's a nice salary. $67,000 a year is a nice sum of money. But compared to some other number nine first-rate strikers, $67,000 is really not on the same level, and Patrick Hajiman at this point should expect a raise here soon, right?
And Privet, hopefully, both of them. Sign them up, extend them immediately. I mean, these guys are awesome. I love the Justin Kay comment, Liverpool legend Andy Carroll still out there kicking it. Absolutely love that. Andy Carroll's a classic number nine English forward. But I wanted to get to a team that doesn't have a big target number nine here, and that's Cincinnati and Columbus, the Battle of Ohio. And Cincinnati win this game on the road and absolutely crush Columbus's 19, I believe, win streak or unbeaten streak at home. And I wanted to hear your thoughts as the star of the show stands at 5-5, Luciano Acosta, and scores a beautiful goal, the game winner.
Not just a beautiful goal, the game winner, but if my memory serves me right, and I can check here quickly.
I think he had the assist too.
He had the assist on the opening goal as well.
Big number nine, Kelce, 19 years old.
The way that I would describe, I think, Lucho Acosta is with a cliche, and it's typically, I feel like the ball on a string cliche works for like basketball. Where did that come from when somebody has the ball on the string? You know, when they've got it on a string. Whatever cliche that sport came from.
I think it is most prevalent with soccer because you're probably, you know, most players dribble more. But I feel like, you know, you could say hockey or you could say basketball in the same respect. And it all kind of meshes together. I would like to hear if someone can chime off in the comments where that, you know, saying what their origin is. But, you know, I think that's a really good way to describe Luciano Acosta within this, you know, within this, you know, I mean, not just the season, but just he was the MVP of last season. I mean, the guy's an MLS veteran, has kind of bounced around the clubs here and there for the last decade or so. But he is playing his best football as of now. And I mean, he's not getting any older, but he still, you know, produces man of the match performances week in, week out.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this match, and I'm glad that you mentioned Acosta because of a couple different reasons. It's because as Charlotte FC looks up the table and just kind of tries to figure out where they sit, who is the class of the league, in my mind, you know, the Cincinnati team is a team that came into Bank of America Stadium, if my memory serves me right. They left with a draw?
I just remember that Luciano Acosta goal last year that was on all the MLS top 10 goals, and that's haunted me for years, it feels like.
It's a 1-1. It's a late concession for Charlotte. It's an extra time goal, an added time goal for ball to string is straight up tetherball. Sorry, I that's how quickly I'm looking at these comments. Ball to string is straight up tetherball. LOL. Happy Monday. That's a good one. Good call. Tetherball. Ball's on a string. Legitimately, literally, the ball is on a string there. But Cincinnati is a team that came into the keep. I'm gonna whisper something here, Brackett, about Columbus, right? And the Charlotte FC reaction to beating Columbus, it's like they were playing down a man
for majority of the game.
Yeah.
So off of Derek Jones. I actually hopped on the live show before that. Derek Jones, we thought would get the start. He didn't, but he came on and then got sent off. So that was a tough reunion for Derek Jones. But, you know, if you're looking at Columbus and Cincinnati, two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. We've beat Columbus and we've tied Cincinnati, so a pretty good blueprint to go off of where we can kind of match up within the league.
Well, something I was thinking about was, and thinking about this MLS roundup segment, was, okay, to me it feels like the cream is starting to rise to the top of the Eastern Conference right now, because when you look at the table, what you see is Inter Miami there with 27 points on top of the East. You've got FC Cincinnati with 24 points. Both teams, a lot of wins in the last five. Miami has won the last five games. Cincinnati has won four in a row as well, starting to separate themselves in the Eastern Conference final. Do you think that those two clubs are the cream of the crop in the East this season?
I'd have to agree, but I was looking at the table earlier today just to get a good feel at where we're at. And what kind of worries me here, I think we'll be okay with Red Bulls, you know, Toronto, New York City FC, but Columbus being right behind us, Philly, Atlanta, all 8th, 9th, and 10th. And then you even can throw in Orlando City here. All these teams, or most of them, were playing in the Champions League, playing two games a week for the start of the season. And so, you know, once MLS is fully the focus, you know, you have League's Cup break as well. I'm thinking that maybe these teams can start to make out ground. So it's hard to say for me if the cream has risen to the crop, but I think we're in a really good spot here to keep a top six position as well, you know, with our home presence and how we win games at home.
Well, I'll also share something here when it comes to Charlotte FC and where it fits into this picture. And it's that there's only three teams, not just in the Eastern Conference, in all of MLS, that have scored fewer goals than Charlotte FC this season. There's 29 teams in MLS, and only three teams have scored fewer goals than Charlotte FC. There is no doubt in my mind that if Charlotte does not hold on to its current spot in the table, it's going to be because of the final third, not the defensive third.
Couldn't agree more. And that's what really is going to come down to the summer and who Zorn and the club decide to sign. And, you know, we are lacking a little bit of depth right now in the front three. And so if someone gets injured, then we could have trouble. I mean, we won this game without Leo Albata, and, you know, I think that can't be understated enough. But we're going to need Pat to play quite a few minutes, Kerwin Vargas to play a lot of minutes, and then we're going to need production out of Brecht Diagra, Yuri Tavares. And I thought Brecht showed flashes of what he can do for this club, and I was actually really, you know, excited by the performance he had on Saturday night. But we'll have to see.
Yeah, we will. I mean, Brecht is Brecht, right? If you want to sit here and tell me Brecht is going to be the key to the final third in the next 6 months, you're going to have to convince me. But hey, I'll be happy to see it.
I just thought he finally started dribbling a little bit and opening up the play by taking people on. I feel like he wasn't doing that early in the season, and I feel like that created a lot of space for Pat and Kerwin to work with. So, you know, we'll have to see. But it's going to be an interesting couple. You know, we're playing Chicago Fire midweek, playing LA Galaxy this weekend. So two really big games in a row here to see if, you know, maybe we'll be in fourth place here at the end of the weekend. We'll have to see.
LA Galaxy currently sitting third place in the Western Conference. 23 goals scored so far this season, 5 wins, only 2 losses, 5 draws. That's going to be a really difficult game on Saturday for Charlotte. And when you see Chicago and you see that they're really struggling, only 2 wins so far for Chicago this season. They haven't won in MLS play since April 6th against Houston. It's now 5 games in a row without a win for Chicago. Charlotte FC going up to Chicago is going to be a really, really big and important Wednesday night match for sure. I do want to get your thoughts on one more thing before we get out of the MLS roundup portion of the show, and that is Inter Miami, Lionel Messi, and what that club is doing. I guess this is probably an easy way to ask the question, considering what we discussed already with Manchester City and the Premier League. If Miami is, do you think that Miami is the Manchester City of MLS this season?
No, I do not. And why I think that is because all of Manchester City's players are in their prime and they have a extremely deep squad, and Miami do not. They're already dealing with injuries, but they have around like 15 guys that can probably put in a decent performance to stay top. And so, I mean, we'll see if Suarez and Messi get leggy as the games come thick and fast. But they definitely have talent wise the best roster. But I would say I just don't know if they have the deepest squad, and Manchester City, in my opinion, have the deepest squad in all of Europe.
It's a really smart take. I think it's a nuanced take for sure, because in my mind, I'm like, yes, Miami is the Manchester City of MLS simply because they have the best players. Like when I look at Manchester City's squad, I go, oh, these are the best players in the Premier League. And then when I look at Inter Miami's squad, I go, well, these are the best players in the Premier League. But to your point, over a long season, you have to be fit. You have to have depth, and we'll see what happens with Inter Miami. But, you know, there's a lot of Messi haters out there. There's a lot of Inter Miami haters out there, and I don't care if you hate Messi. I don't care if you love Messi. I don't care if you hate MLS's coverage. All that I'm saying is, and I think this is a really important point to make at this point in the season, Brackett, is that when you look at the MLS table, Western Conference and Eastern Conference combined, Inter Miami is at the top of the table.
Yeah, and I mean, they scored 6 goals last week in the second half alone. 5 assists from Messi and a goal from Messi. But then they go in this game, this weekend, and Messi doesn't even assist or score any goals, and they still win, you know, 3-2. So, you know, he still plays a vital part, but they're going to need the surrounding cast to kind of pick up the weight. And we saw a goal from Luis Suarez. We saw a goal from Benjamin Cremaschi getting, you know, his breaking his goal record here this season. So we'll have to see if, you know, the supporting cast, the Matias Rojas guy who's come onto the scene as of late, is a baller. So we'll see if he can keep picking up the slack for Messi if, you know, he goes to Copa America, like Brian said, or anything else.
Yeah, Brian Schufert here in the comments is interested to see how Miami looks with Messi playing with Argentina in Copa America. It's a great shout out for sure. All I'm going to say is this, right? And this is very, very simple. And it's almost like a public service announcement at this point. Because again, I don't care how you feel about Lionel Messi. I don't care at all. You can feel however you want. But 10 goals already. 9 assists already. We are potentially talking about the greatest season in MLS history. Okay? So from that point of view, it's like, start paying attention. Because Messi is going down as one of the greatest players of all time. And now he's coming to MLS and potentially going to put together the greatest season of all time in MLS. That's right here out in front of us. We can reach out and touch that. The season has started in a way that, despite how much you want to hate on the guy, despite how much you want to hate on the fact that Apple TV and MLS shove Messi down your throat, the guy is stepping up and he's playing unbelievably well, and he's got a chance to have the best statistical season in MLS history. Let's just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I wonder how Copa America is going to affect the stats, but I think it would be even more of a tribute to him that he misses a month of games and still is statistical leader in both categories of goals and assists. And that just shows the greatness of Messi and, you know, him gracing the MLS with his play. Cause it's been really fun to watch, love him or hate him.
It's time now for a quick segment. I tease this for a couple reasons, because first and foremost, I do give a shit. But secondly, I think it's really fun. To talk about the English Football League Championship playoffs, the FL Championship, the playoffs. The richest game in all of sports is happening here soon at Wembley Stadium. It's either going to be Norwich City. It is either going to be West Brom. It is either going to be Leeds United, or it is going to be Southampton. Those are the 4 clubs fighting for promotion into the Premier League. This is something that you can watch on ESPN Plus. By the way, two matches on Sunday produced no goals, 180 minutes, no goals. Little cagey in the first leg of these playoffs. There's no doubt about that. But the second legs are coming on Thursday and Friday this week. It is Norwich City on the road at Leeds, and it is West Brom on the road at Southampton, that latter match on Friday, the former match on Thursday. First, I ask you, what do these playoffs actually mean? For somebody that's kind of a casual soccer fan, that's taking a look and saying, what are these games and what do they mean? What would your answer to that be, Danny?
A chance to watch your team in the Premier League, you know? Our good friend Ewan, I posed this question to him. Would you rather win games in the championship or lose games in the Premier League? And he did say, you know, he enjoys when his side wins and scores a bunch of goals. So the championship is fun, but there's nothing like having that Premier League coverage of your side, win or lose. Right. And so, you know, not only just for the fans to get to watch, you know, their teams play some of the best teams in the world, but you know, you get some coverage too as fans, as a stadium, to have a global audience watch your games. And I think, you know, for a historic team like Leeds, you know, we've seen all these teams in the Premier League before. That's a big deal. And that can really help a club financially as well as brand awareness. And so I think it means a lot to these clubs. And I'm really interested to see who's going to kind of be able to beat themselves out at one of these teams to get in the Premier League and see if they can stay up.
Who do you think of these four teams, right? Because let's talk about the teams that automatically qualified for the Premier League. Ipswich Town and Leicester City. Leicester, a team that went down this past season, was not a good situation for that club after winning the Premier League in the last decade as well, but bounces right back up. They win the championship. A player that I really like, Harry Winks, helped them along the way, had a really strong side. Really strong performance in the midfield this year for Leicester City. Harry Winks did. Similar to the way Oliver Skip did for Norwich City when Norwich City got promoted into the Premier League. There's some really nice midfielders at Spurs that can really play at a really high level, but maybe not in the top six. And those two guys are two of those players for sure. So Leicester and Ipswich Town, they're on their way up. But these four teams, I'm just asking you personally here. Forget about who's the best, who deserves it. What of these four teams, who do you want to see get promoted into the Premier League next season?
I'd like to see Leeds again. I think Leeds are such a historic club. I really enjoyed them in the Premier League, especially with Marcelo Bielsa at the wheel. Obviously, it's Daniel Farke now, an ex-Norwich City manager, which makes that tie very interesting. But Leeds have probably one of the biggest clubs in England. You know, some of the best supporters, one of the best stadiums. I just really like Leeds, especially. I feel like there's a strong American connection, especially, you know, when they had Adams, McKinney, and co. on the team. So personally, I would like to see Leeds up, but you know, I am a big fan of Southampton and Norwich. I don't really care for West Brom, to be honest. So they're probably ranked dead last in my rankings of teams I'd like to see.
Well, you mentioned the United States players, and you said you talked in
past tense.
In the past tense, that's right, about Leeds. But we can talk in the current tense.
We could. The president, Josh Sargent.
Josh Sargent, the number nine for Norwich City, played really well on Sunday at home in this match that ended 0-0. A player that I thought really played well in the World Cup for the United States of America this past World Cup in Qatar. And he came off at the end of the match with a bit of a knock, hoping that he can start on Thursday. But for me personally, I mean, for a couple of different reasons, I'm a Norwich City supporter. I want to see Norwich City get back up into the Premier League. But do you think about Josh Sargent leading the line for a Premier League side going into the 2024-2025 season? I think that would be really special for U.S. supporters, considering you've got, you know, other players in the Premier League and globally that really aren't getting a lot of shine, right? You really got to dig deep into other leagues to find U.S. players right now. Nobody's really showing out in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, him and Haji Wright have gotten a lot of love because of their performance in the championship. I mean, Haji Wright mainly because of the FA Cup performances he put up as Coventry were knocked out by Manchester United. But Josh Sargent, he's 24 years of age, not young, but not old at all. He's not even in the prime of his career, and he banged in 16 goals and 2 assists and 26 apps. So, you know, he had the injury bug a little bit, and the fact that he came back stronger and really ran it up that goal tally with 16 goals is super impressive. I think he's a very complete striker. I think that there's not one thing he does really well, but I think he does all things, you know, fairly well. So I'd love to see Josh Sargent kind of test his luck in the Premier League. I mean, he was in the Bundesliga for a little bit with Werder Bremen beforehand. So I would love to see what he can do in the top flight and see if he can take that next step. And if he can take that next step, then he's definitely in the conversation for the U.S. national team head striker.
Well, hell yeah, man. We just did a EFL Championship playoff segment here on Charlotte Soccer Show because it's the full-time roundup takeover. Awesome to hear you discuss that. It's a pleasure discussing that here on the show. I can't wait to do more of this in the future. I really can't because the global game is kind of coursing through Daniel and I, our veins. And just so you know, this full-time roundup Charlotte Soccer Show collab It's something that we're doing tonight for a reason. I think this is something that you're going to see a little bit more often here as the year rolls on.
Absolutely. So is it time to get in some predictions for some midweek mania?
Yes, I've got some. I've got some time. I've got a few minutes here. Let's do it late here on the show. We're an hour in. We appreciate everybody watching us live. Over 150 people here watching us live here on the live stream. Appreciate everybody hanging out watching us live. You are the real TIFOs. Thanks so much for your support. It's midweek madness. There's so many games coming this week, fast and furious. So let's just have at it. Let's make some predictions and have some fun.
Let's go. So, of course, we have to start with City and Spurs. I want to hear your thoughts here.
Okay, I've got Manchester City 3. I've got Tottenham 2. And this is going to follow a very similar game flow that you've seen recently, which is Manchester City scores and Tottenham has a late flurry, but they lose anyway. And that's how I see this game happening on Tuesday.
I really hope you're wrong. I'm going to go 2-2 here to make things interesting in the Premier League. But no City win here. We'll go to the Italian League here for the Coppa Italia final. That you don't dabble too much in there, but Atalanta do play Juventus in the Coppa Italia final on Wednesday. You can find that on Paramount. Are you going to pick a side here?
Well, I have to say that there was one kit at the Hot Fly tailgate on Saturday from Rare and Retro Soccer, our friends there at Rare and Retro Soccer, that really caught my eye. And it was the Weston McKennie Juventus kit. And for that reason, I've got Juventus.
There we go.
On Wednesday.
I'm going to take the other side here. I'm going to say Atalanta win 3-1 in regular time. No need for 90 minutes plus here, but I am fairly confident in their abilities. We'll go to MLS here. Chicago or Charlotte FC. Charlotte FC is on the road, but a variable winnable game. How are you feeling about this one?
Oh my, I think it's once again, we're having the conversation bracket that is, can Charlotte FC win on the road? And it's a team that is only has two wins. I believe Charlotte FC has won at Chicago in the past. I'm fairly certain that they have. If my memory serves me right, there was a big comeback on the road at Chicago in the past for this club. Could be wrong about that. I'm pretty certain that was the case.
We won 2-0 last time we played.
2-0 last time we played against Chicago. I'll tell you what I'm afraid of. First, I'm afraid of 0-0. I think 0-0 is a real possibility here.
Could be.
But let me just predict 1-0 Charlotte. Clean sheet on the road. Patrick Ajmong scores another goal, and Dean Smith has to figure out who the hell plays striker after Patrick Ajmong just played 180 minutes in 4 days.
So the overall head-to-head, 3 Charlotte wins, 1 Chicago win. We've beat them at their home place both times, and so I'm going to say a 2-0 Charlotte win and to get a good 3 points here. Well-deserved.
Okay, love it. Let's get 3 points. All of a sudden, I'll just say this. If you get 3 points on Wednesday and you start thinking about 9 points in 8 days, you go, holy shit. That's a really
nice. We're on to something.
That's a really nice return, and Dean Smith is starting to cook a little bit. What else?
Absolutely.
You got?
Orlando versus Miami at Orlando. We've talked so much about Messi. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And, there might be some rotation here, so a good chance for Orlando to do a smash and grab.
I don't think this Orlando team is the team that we saw in the past get to cup finals and win silverware. I just feel like the team has struggled a little bit out of the gate so far this season, and I think that Luis Suarez is going to show up here on Wednesday night and bag a couple goals, and Miami's going to get a win.
I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. I think they rest Messi or Suarez or both. So I think this is a good chance for Orlando at home to get some points, and I think they'll be able to at least get a point here. And the last game on the docket is Cincy versus Atlanta. Atlanta off a loss, Cincy off a big win. Do you think Cincy are going to put two and two together here?
I mean, it's what's funny is like I when I think about DC United beating Atlanta, I think, well, yes, that's a good thing. But I'm like, well, I don't really need DC to pick up 3 points. And then when I think about Cincinnati playing Atlanta, I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I want Cincinnati to win that game. I'm like, well, do I really want Cincinnati to pick up 3 points? Who fucking cares? At the end of the day, like, as long as Atlanta gets 0 points, that's all that matters.
Agreed.
And they're going up against the Cincinnati team that we already talked about, Lucho Acosta, in this match. He's clearly the best player on the field. I think Atlanta is a team that needs a result bad right now, though. And Cincinnati coming out of the Ohio Derby, winning that Ohio Derby, this is, I think, what I would call your classic letdown spot. Mm-hmm. So Cincinnati's going to need a real, real professional performance on Wednesday. But that being said, the reigning MVP at home and midweek, he's, if you want professional, you've got it there.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you. I think Cincinnati win this game. We are 5 points from Atlanta. I would love that gap to even get bigger here after Wednesday. So I'm gonna predict a 2-1 Cincinnati win. Maybe a stoppage time Luciano Acosta goal. Fantastic. All in my shot.
Love it, dude. I've had so much fun with you on this Charlotte Soccer Show full-time roundup collaboration episode. And I appreciate the TIFOs hanging in, watching the show. Great audience. Drop us a note. Let us know what you thought about the show. Let us know what you've thought about this collab. I hope you've enjoyed hearing commentary about the global game, the game that we love, the beautiful game here on Charlotte Soccer Show and Full Time Roundup. Shout out to my co-host Daniel Bramlett, who did a great job covering Charlotte FC media availability and training today. He was there. You can go to our Twitter feed at For the Crown Baby to see that. Shout out to you, Brackett, and your co-host Matt Geslin as well for always, you know, keeping a keen eye on the global game, the beautiful game that is. Man, I've had so much fun hanging out with you talking soccer.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure, John. Thank you so much. And thank you for all the TIFOs as well.
You can stick around. I've got this grand idea that I want to do a post-game show on Wednesday night. Whether that happens or not is TBD, but you can certainly expect Charlotte Soccer Show to be back soon. You can expect full-time roundup here to be back soon as well. What's your plans for the rest of the week, Brackett, on the show?
We're going to be looking to do an episode on Thursday, and so if you wish to tune in here, you can always tune on any platform at Full-Time Roundup. You can always follow us on X at Full-Time Roundup as well, but we do always a Sunday, Monday show, as well as a Thursday show, you know, when we're available. So I think we're going to be looking, with all the games coming this midweek, we're definitely going to be looking at a Thursday episode here. So definitely tune in for that.
We've got soccer on Tuesday. We've got soccer on Wednesday. We've got soccer on Thursday. We've got soccer on Friday. We've got soccer on Saturday. And guess what? We've got soccer on Sunday, too. It's a fantastic week for soccer fans all over the globe. It's springtime, and we're all going to enjoy this beautiful game together. So as always, I'm John Hayes. He's Daniel Brackett. Brackett, thanks so much for joining us on the show tonight. And we will talk to y'all soon. Cheers.